welcome to today's episode of Rainer on Leadership, your online home for leadership lessons and advice for the local church. I'm your host, Jonathan Howell, and as always, I'm joined by Tom Rainer, the president and CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources.
Are you going to be able to change my title?
Yeah. And we're going to get there in a couple episodes.
Okay. I'm no longer the president and CEO of Lifeway.
Well, you still are. So
I know I still am, but I'm just thinking about when the time comes that my successor is here, and you've been in this routine for nearly 500 episodes.
Yeah.
President and CEO of Lifeway, and all of a sudden it's going to be, hello, president and CEO of,
wait a minute.
No. He's no longer has any value or worth. He has no title. So are you going to be able to handle that?
I'm fine with it.
Okay.
Are you going to be able to handle it?
Yeah, I think.
Okay.
I think I'll be all right. I'm struggling.
You're coping.
I'm trying to figure out what I can do, how I can stay busy and retire. By the way, I'm going to the beach tomorrow.
Yeah, thanks. I'll be at my house with four kids and all that tomorrow.
While
you're at the beach.
Understand that the dolphins are plentiful, so we'll be on dolphin watch. They've actually moved north from southwest Florida because of red tide.
Oh, okay.
So let's talk about unity in the church. We could do one on unity in denomination, but I don't have enough time to cover all of
the... we'd have to find a unified denomination.
Yes.
Hey-o.
So we're not going to do that, but we are going to talk about churches that are unified, and we're going to talk about that. But first... with always thanks to Vander Blumen Search Group for stealing Eric Geiger. Such a great sponsor.
Well, and they are the premier pastor search firm dedicated to helping churches and ministries build great teams. They've helped thousands of churches, including Mariners Church in Southern California.
is so cruel.
Yours, find their church staff and are uniquely geared to help you discern who God is calling to lead your church. You can find out more about Vander Blumen Search Group by visiting westaffthechurch.com. For those... maybe out of the loop on that, Mariners, Eric Geiger, who was the vice president here at Lifeway, mm-hmm. left recently to go and pastor Mariners Church.
Well, not only was he the vice president of Lifeway.
Senior vice president.
Senior vice president for sure. I think most of our board would have seen him as an heir apparent to me. And so not only was the departure tough for Lifeway, I was thinking, okay, Rainer retires and Geiger's the likely
candidate.
Smooth transition. Without being presumptuous on the board, I still think most of the board would have said, yeah, we get that. He checks off all the boxes. But the dude wanted to go back to the local church, and Mariners is a great, great opportunity. So I do wish him the best.
Yeah.
That's said tongue in cheek. People cannot work their schedules in their lives around what I want, so I understand fully.
They can't.
I got
that memo. Me and Amy are going, wait, what do you mean?
Yes.
Hold on.
Everything you do, we try to work our lives around, Rainer, so don't say that. I get it.
All right,
let's talk about unity since there's so much disunity in this room over these issues.
We have five key reasons that churches can become more unified. So these are kind of the ways the churches draw together. Some of them good, some of them bad, because we'll talk about that, especially number two. I guess the big question is, why is unity so important in a church? I mean, I guess it goes back to John 17.
It goes to John 17, 1 Corinthians 12.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot.
You cannot be a body unless the members of the body are functioning as they're supposed to be.
Yeah.
So, and of course, Jesus did say, as they are one, and he wanted the body to be one. So there's definitely biblical foundation, biblical truth, but there's practical application. And by the time Paul writes to the church at Corinth, there is practical application of this. Let me say this before we get to the five. The five that we have here are the most frequent responses that I've seen at Church Answer Central. So,
okay.
And people are saying, did you pull this out of thin air? No, I didn't pull it out of thin air. It's not an objective research project that Lifeway Research did, but it's things that I'm hearing from the roughly 1,600 members at Church Answers on the Church Answer Central Forum.
And growing,
yes.
All right, so we've got five reasons. Number one, they have a community outward focus.
The more anyone looks beyond themselves, the less self-centered they will be. The less self-centered they will be, the more unity there will be in whatever they're a part of.
Yeah.
That applies to the family. Look at the biblical relationship between a husband and a wife according to Scripture. The wife is to submit to the husband. The husband is to love Christ as Christ loved the church. That's mutual submission. That's the whole idea that we are looking after the good of one another. So the family unit is based upon this outward focus, looking beyond yourself. Look at the Great Commission. Great Commission, I do all of Matthew 28:18-20, not just 19 and 20, I do 18 through 20. But look at the Great Commission. The Great Commission does not really just say go, but it says as you are going. So everything that we do, we're to be doing on an outward focus. Go as you are going, make disciples of all nations. So you apply that practically to a church. And a church that is outwardly focused, particularly making differences in their community, is going to be so busy doing things for others, they're not going to have time for some of these other things we'll be talking about, like gossiping and bullying and criticism, because their energy, their resource is going to be on the other. And here's the thing about it. If you are outwardly focused as a church, the members are happier because they're doing things that make a difference positively instead of doing things that make a difference negatively. So if there's simply one thing that is the most important for unity, it is to get the church outwardly focused. Got a question on Church Answers 3 weeks ago. By the way, the new forum really looks great.
And it's got a new engine back in there for the forum.
Yeah, it's there's so many features that are really neat there. Got a question on the forum. Our church is divided. We're fighting over this and this. What do we do? I said, essentially in simple terms, I said, get an outward focus. He said, within 2 weeks.
Wow.
2 weeks, the church's attitude had changed. They just did something very simple. I don't remember what it was. I don't know if he even said, but he said, we started focusing on our community. And the fight that was going on is no longer a fight that's going on. That's a pretty quick turnaround. But that's what happens when a church is unified, and that's what happens how it gets unified with an outward focus.
All right. The second way that churches become more unified is whenever they come through a crisis.
You know, everybody who listens to Rainer on Leadership with any degree of continuity knows that at some point I'm going to talk about Sam, Art, or Jess.
Yeah.
One of the three.
Usually not Art, but okay.
Yeah, I talk about
Sorry, Art.
By the way, I had a great conversation with... Now, I'm talking about Art more, especially now that he's in this stewardship space
and he's doing
a lot of things there. So I was thinking about the three boys, and I'm trying to remember if it was this time last year when the hurricane hit.
And roughly, yeah. I mean, it'd be around this time. I think it was toward the middle of September. So maybe about the time we're releasing this. So yeah.
And everyone saw the path, and it was the eye of the storm was to go over Bradenton, Florida. I mean, it was supposed to be devastating. And for those of you who are unaware, Sam is the pastor of West Bradenton in Bradenton, Florida. Evacuations were underway. It was really, really crazy. What, you find the date? Oh, they were just really anticipating horrific damage. The good news is the eye of the storm did a slight jog, just a slight jog to the east, and barely the eye did not go over Bradenton. There's still a lot of stuff going on, a lot of flooding, a lot of damage, but not nearly as bad as it should have been. But let's see. September 10. So yeah,
so it was about this time.
Yeah.
Just a few days from now.
Well, if you're listening to
last
it,
week.
It would be a few days last week. So a year ago, and Sam was one of the families that had to evacuate. He evacuated at what I thought was the last minute. Oh, gosh. That's another story.
He's fine.
He's fine now. Okay. I was not fine, and even worse, his mother was not fine as she was watching the eye of the storm come over. And I mean, if y'all remember the reports, there was all kinds of predictions of devastation that was to take place, just going right through the eye and on up to the panhandle, but going right through the eye going right through Southwest Florida. But he got out of the path. I want to give this is going to be a little bit longer than I thought, but I'll make sure we finish this up quickly. I want to give a shout out to First Baptist Church of Port St. Joe.
Uh-huh.
Because as he was evacuating, they found out on social media and they had him come preach at the church as the hurricane was coming through, and they could not have church in Bradenton. So Port St. Joe in the Panhandle, they had him preach, and he actually did a Facebook Live for his church at Port St. Joe.
That's cool.
I thought that was just the neatest gesture. So appreciative of them. So the storm took that little jog to the east, and so they survived the worst of it. But that church went into action. It could have been a crisis. It was a crisis. There were several of their seniors who were out of power, had trees that had fallen in the yard on their home. And so Sam went back and led teams to help in the recovery. And to this day, many people in the Bradenton community still refer to that church as the church that was the big help assistance after the hurricane.
The Chainsaw Church.
Yeah. And you remember who paid for the chainsaw?
Provided lovingly by Tom Rainer.
Yes. I don't.
Philanthropist, benefactor.
I don't know how many chainsaws bought, but he said, "Dad, would you like to buy some chainsaws?"
And after he'd bought.
No,
he did this before.
No, he actually asked, but his mother was on the phone.
Oh, well.
And so there was.
The answer is there.
Yeah, yeah. I don't even know if I answered. She said, of course he would. Something of that effect. So the whole thing was, it was a time of significant unity for the church because he led them through that crisis. There can be crises of, I'm thinking of another church now where staff members had moral failure and the pastor's leading through that. If a pastor or leaders come through a crisis, the church senses we've made it and we are unified through it. So leading well through a crisis is a source of unity. I took a long time on that one, Jonathan, but there's a lot of backstory to it.
It's Rainer on leadership. You can do whatever you want. So, all right, number three, they have a leadership that keeps them on track. It kind of ties into the last one.
It does. I want to kind of unpack this a little bit. I think I talked to you about it yesterday. There are three areas where pastors particularly, not just pastors, but others, spend a significant amount of their time. And one of those is pastoral care. Mm-hmm. Now, by the way, all of these are positive.
Yeah, all good things.
All good things, but it can get unbalanced.
Yeah.
There can be imbalance taking place. So one of them is pastoral care. And a pastor can just have counseling requests, hospital visits, weddings, funerals, and it can just take the time. And before you know it, it's 50 hours a week just to do pastoral care. Another one is pastoral crisis. I'm not referring to the major kind of one-time crisis that we just talked about. I'm talking about the ongoing crises, the conflict, the
so-and-so's having marriage problems, so-and-so's in the hospital, so-and-so
or there's chatter going on, or this
they just
this,
got diagnosed this, with cancer or this whatever.
Well, that's more the pastoral care.
Yeah.
This the pastoral crisis would be the negative, the criticism, the things that are popping up here and there. And then the other one would be what I call the pastoral comfort. I don't mean that in a negative sense, but it's the things that pastors are more comfortable doing, sermon preparation, meetings, the rhythm of the church, and so on. You take those three PCs, not political correctness, you take pastoral care, pastoral crisis, and pastoral comfort, and there's little time left for reaching out beyond the church, going back to number one. And the type of leader that is in a unified church is he keeps them on track. He is determined. I was in a Church Answers conference call yesterday, and the pastor was saying we've been in a plateau for a year. I have his numbers. He's been in a plateau for a year. The good thing about it is a growth plateau.
Plateau.
He had grown up to that and then plateaued instead of gone down to that and plateaued. And he said, "What do we do?" And we were talking about different options. I said, "Tell me what you do." He said, "What do you mean? Tell me what you do with your time." And basically found out that there were some things that he was doing. Those definitely outward focus, but not for the outward focus for specifically for the congregation. And I said, "You've got to start leading some of that yourself. You've got to, if you're going to keep your congregation on track, you've got to do so as well." And it was like a light switch went on. If I could have seen a bulb above his head, it would have been ding, and I would have seen it right on the Zoom call through video. Great coaching call, but this guy, he just got it. He just really got it.
All right, the next one is that they have a low tolerance for gossiping and bullying. Now, is this The church or the leader or both?
Both.
Okay.
Both. There's a culture.
A culture that pushes back against gossiping and bullying.
Did a post in early September. I believe it was on Labor Day, if I recall correctly. And it was about people standing up for pastors when they are attacked, when they're criticized, when they're maligned, when they're bullied. And it got a hefty response, a good response. And that type of behavior, that type of response is the type that says we're not going to put up with this. Now, should a pastor never be criticized? That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying the constant barrage of criticism, bullying that takes place with many pastors, enough leaders in the church are going to say we're not going to put up with that. I've got my own view of Acts 6, Jonathan, that is not necessarily different than everyone else, but it's where I put the emphasis. In Acts 6, if you remember correctly, the widows were being overlooked in the daily distribution of food. Those widows of Greek origin that did not have the connections within the early church like the Hebraic widows did. What did they do? They appointed 7 men full of wisdom and the Holy Spirit and gave the task to them. Some people say that that is the beginning of a diaconate. Could be.
Yeah.
The root word for serve or deacon is in there, so it could be. I'm not going to argue that point. I'm saying that the primary task of those 7 not only was to do ministry, but was to keep unity in the church.
Yeah.
There was division within the church. As a matter of fact, if that is the origin of the diaconate, one of the primary roles of deacons then is to keep unity in the church.
Well, and stop the bullying and the ostracizing of people in the church.
Right, exactly. So I think some of the healthiest deacon bodies are those who serve by keeping unity, which is exactly what happened in Acts 6. And I think maybe we need to start relooking at the role of deacons, because one of the most devastating things in churches today is lack of unity.
Yeah.
Deacons need to be leading forward there.
Well, I think also needs to be pointed out that unity and does not equal authoritarianism.
No.
And it's not, unity in a church is not doing whatever the pastor says. That's not unity. That's authoritarianism.
Yeah. That's an autocratic leadership. That's not unified. That's one way.
Yeah.
But strong leadership can bring about unity.
Yes.
But it's not autocratic leadership. It's usually servant type of leadership.
Yes, exactly. So it just felt like that fit in well with that point. All right. The final point here, they have a clear and actionable vision statement.
I'm a simple church guy when it comes to vision statements.
Well, you wrote the book on it. So.
Yeah. Eric wrote the book, and I helped a little bit on that one. The idea of a vision statement for most churches is a long statement that goes on the wall or the website that nobody knows. There are some horrendous vision statements. You know what I might do? I just thought about this.
Oh, boy.
I might do a blog post on some just of the works. Go grab some. Maybe change it a little.
I got a couple I can send you.
I bet if I put it out on social media, I could probably get a few as well of horrendous vision statements. The statements that sound so great that nobody knows what it is, nor are they actionable. But I'm a simple church kind of guy. And for you listeners who don't know what I'm talking about, I advocate that the vision statement should be immediately actionable.
Yeah.
Whatever, it should be simple, clear, and actionable.
Yeah. Maybe instead of like the bad ones, we should share the really good ones.
Yeah.
And say, compare yours to this.
Oh, that would be a good idea.
And that way we're not bashing churches. That could go spiraling downward in a hurry.
That's probably a really good idea.
Yeah. We don't want to be gossiping or bullying.
That's right.
We want unity in the Reign on Leadership.
But maybe what I can do is come up with a fictitious vision statement.
We can probably do that.
And oh, I know I can do that.
Oh, yeah.
And say, we just made this one up, pieces here, pieces there from other churches. Now, here are some really good ones.
Mm-hmm.
The guy that I was talking to yesterday, on my coaching call with him. By the way, I do those coaching calls on Zoom, which is a video conferencing. And so if you're wondering how I do that coaching, we're looking at each other, talking to each other. And he had given me his vision statement the last time we were on coaching call. I said, well, that's horrendous. And, you know, in my coaching relationships, I'm pretty straightforward. I try to be an encourager, but I'm pretty straightforward. I just said, that's horrendous.
They're not coming to you for, you know, pats on the back.
Well, sometimes they need encouragement.
Well, but My point is, you're there to help them.
I'm there to help them. So I said, okay. I said, where are you reading your vision statement from? He said, I got it right here on a piece of paper. I said, turn the paper over. I said, tell me your vision statement. He couldn't do it.
It's because it's too long and convoluted.
So we worked through a vision statement, and I think we ended up with worship. You need to be in a worship service on a regular basis, belong. You need to be in a group, community group on a regular basis, and go. You need to be in the community on a regular basis. So I think he took a variation of our churches, Church of Spring Hill, which is belong, thrive, go, and he went with worship, belong, go. And I think that's really, really good. In fact, I kind of like his better.
Oh, don't tell Jess.
I like it.
All right.
So, five ways
to have a clear vision statement.
Have a clear.
So important.
Because people will be unified if they have something around which to unify.
It gets everybody on the same page.
Exactly.
Everybody knows where the church is headed, what the focus of the church is.
If you ask most employees at Lifeway, what is our vision statement?
Biblical solutions for life.
For life. Exactly. Very simple. Biblical solutions for life. Five words. I did that one time. You remember that?
I remember that. Dr. Wagner still hasn't let you live that down.
The five words I call the four words.
Yeah.
So I think these are five very tangible, real things that they can do. And as you talk about ways that you can be healthier in the church, you always think of Midwestern Seminary as a place to go get your ministry training.
Yeah, they have an 81-hour MDiv program that is completely full of everything that you need and nothing you don't. It provides a complete foundation for full-time ministry leaders, and you can join other students in vibrant Kansas City as you train in a unique collaborative environment focused on the local church or study online in your current ministry context. Midwestern Seminary is developing a discipleship culture devoted to the local church and committed to God's unchanging word. You can start your training today at mbts.edu/mdiv. And I think tomorrow you can watch Dr. Rainer live on the Midwestern website from chapel.
Oh,
so because we're releasing this, we're headed to Midwestern today.
Okay, as we're releasing this, and they've asked me not to preach.
Well, that's good. What are you seriously?
Yeah,
what are you doing?
Dr. Allen wants to interview me about leadership and retirement. All of a sudden, I'm the old fella specialist, and so people want.
I didn't know that. That's gonna be cool.
I'm looking forward to it. So we'll see. You know, he's always so creative and he's trying.
Those students they dodged a bullet there.
Yeah, he's thinking, how can I not have Rainer preach? Oh, retirement, we'll do that.
Oh, whatever. He'd love to have you preach there.
He said so, but I look forward to talking to him
This may be a little bit more beneficial, though, for the students.
I'll look forward to it.
That's going
to
be cool. All right. Well, thanks again for joining us today here on Rainer on Leadership. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, or in your favorite podcasting app. And join us online at tomrainer.com, where we are growing healthy churches together.